You are now entering the Back in Time podcast.
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
We don't need roads.
Bueller.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Here are your hosts, Kyle and JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, what's going on, man?
Dude, super stoked to be into the greatest year ever, if I dare say so. The year that I was born, 1985, tonight is gonna rock.
Yeah, I know with names, it's name sack. Is this our year sack? I don't know. We're both 85 kids.
Did you say sack?
A year sack? I don't know.
Do you mean namesake?
I don't know where I'm going with this, JD. I just know that we're going to have a lot of fun, and there's a lot of great movies to pick from.
But you did say sack. Audience, lo and behold, Kyle said sack. There's a new t-shirt, Kyle said sack.
Oh, that's awesome. Brilliant.
Sack, well done boy. By me.
Sack, my boy. Well, we're going to have a guest online here in just a minute, but before we bring him on, I want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, CastBox, and YouTube. And while you're at it, throw us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's going to help us continue to grow and bring in new listeners every single month. Today, we're discussing top 5 movies from the year 1985, and on the show tonight, we are joined by a special guest. He is the host of the podcast, Fave 5 from Fans. Please welcome to the show, Jamie. Jamie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, JD. Thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
All right. And yeah, absolutely. And we are excited to have you as well. And just right off the bat, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about your show. I know you started in January. You've got some episodes out. You've got some in the can. But for those who may not be familiar, let us know who you are.
Well, thanks, Kyle. Well, my show seems to be a lot like yours. What I like to do is invite a guest on that we share a common interest in, sort of like the Venn diagram of pop culture, or as our friend would say, pop culture. And so we come up with a list for each of us, and then we go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now, I usually have a couple of little honorable mentions. Depending on the topic, it might be a dishonorable mention, but we generally have a lot of fun.
Yeah, man, we're excited to have you, our mutual buddy, Phantom Dark Dave. Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. I remember. Now, you were part of his Trek episodes, right?
No, actually, I had never been on one of his episodes. Catch him last year, and Dave's been on my show once so far. Of all the horror and sci-fi and weird shit that we do, Dave and I did Jimmy Stewart films, and I've got to tell you, because I let him, hey, choose whatever you want to. And we started off with musicals and then shifted to Jimmy Stewart. And let me tell you, it was a hell of a lot of fun.
That's very interesting. I like that. And that was on your podcast? You guys did that one?
Yeah, that was on my show. So he and I have actually tried to do one episode, and we had a lot of technical difficulties. So I'm in kind of a hiatus right now, waiting to swing back. But he and I are actually fixing to do another podcast for the Fave 5, and I'll be inviting my daughter Lily back on with me, and we're going to be doing, I guess I can go ahead and give it away now, it's going to be favorite musicals, like the movies.
Oh. And
Dave is a huge musical fan, as you may well know, loves Judy Garland, loves Mickey Rooney. And so this is going to be an interesting one. Lily is a huge thespian herself. She performs in CYT, which is a Christian youth theater group. So I'm going to be interested to see how the two of them interact.
Interesting. Okay. I'm only curious to see, are you allowing animated movies? Because if so, I can probably spoil Dave's number one.
It's as long as it's a musical, even if it's a theater that's never been, you know, to a movie. I know one of Lily's is actually one that she's never seen in person before. So I am interested because I know Dave likes the old school musicals. So it will be interesting to know which ones he's going to have on his list.
Okay. Very cool. Now, I should mention we are a part of the same network now.
Yes, sir.
We're all under SIP Network Podcast, which, yeah, it was interesting coming up with the name.
It was slightly irregular.
Yes, which I think I might have even, I might have been able to throw that out. But either way, yeah, we were almost basically Dave's podcast network, but that got shot down. It was like a podcast network from another world. I'm like, this seems oddly like you're just the name of your show now. But yeah, I'm really excited. We have some awesome podcasts on there. We're going to be jumping on each other's shows. We're going to be sharing each other's content. So yeah, if you guys like our show, follow Jamie's podcast, Fave 5 from Fans, throw him a subscribe, follow him on Twitter. And yeah, let's have some fun. So let's get to it though. The task at hand, top five movies of 1985. We're going to start with JD. I'll be in the middle. Jamie, we'll let you close this out here with your pick. And then we'll do 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then we'll give some honorable mentions at the end, which I know is slightly different than yours. So
that's okay. I'm already at the worst place on the human centipede. So whatever you want to do.
There you go. All right. Perfect.
R.I.P. Dr. Laser.
JD, start us off, man. Number five. What do you got?
So for my number five pick, I'm obviously going to be in 1985 for obvious reasons, of course. But I'm going to go with what was Jim Carrey's first starring role and say Once Bitten.
Wow.
Good one.
Okay.
This is a movie that I didn't see until probably like 93 or 94. And it used to play on repeat on HBO. And there was just something about it and his performance that really like dragged me into liking the movie and really enjoying everything that they had created and accomplished. And it's a cool little picture. And if you haven't had a chance to check out Jim Carrey at his stringiest, this is definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, I should mention, Jamie, we often refer to Jim Carrey's acting style as being very stringy.
Uh-huh.
And I think you can figure out why, because he's looks like he's a human ventriloquist.
He does. He does.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know what? I haven't watched Once Bitten in a long, long time, and I feel like I just saw it pop up maybe on Amazon Prime, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, this is definitely worth a watch. And JD, frankly, I'm very surprised this is on your list.
I think my list is going to have a lot of surprises. 1985 was quite the year for movies. There's some big names. There's some little names. There's some squeakers, and there's some pullers in there.
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw it over to myself here with my number five pick. Now, honestly, I went back and forth on five. This was by far the hardest pick because 1, 2, 3, 4, I think were pretty simple for me, to be honest. But five, I have like seven movies that are interchangeable at five here. And this almost feels like a cop-out, but I have to stay true to myself. It's one of my favorite movies. It's also our topic of the month. And I am going with Teen Wolf is my number five pick. What can I say, man? I love this movie. I watch it every single year. I watch it religiously. I'm a huge fan of Chubbs, although he doesn't score any points in the entire movie. He runs down the court with his arms flapping in the wind. It's just a great movie. It's a very quotable movie. And darn it, if I don't want a keg of beer right now.
Well, I tell you, 1985, Michael J. Fox, that was his year, man.
Killing it in 85.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'll get any argument from you, JD. I have a feeling it might be on your list, or maybe it was just outside. But Jamie, I'm interested in your number five pick. What do you have?
So a little bit of a backstory. 1985, I was 15 years old.
Okay.
So in the town that I grew up in, a little town called Alexandria in Louisiana, we had a dollar cinema. And so every weekend, we could generally go and see at least two movies. All of these movies that we're going to be talking about, I saw probably every one of them in the theater. So I've got a lot of good memories for some of these, especially like just Once Bitten. Oh, Lauren Hutton. Oh, my God. She's so, so beautiful to a 15-year-old, you know. Oh, Lord. But I've got to start my number five off with the movie that, if I'm not mistaken, until mid-2000, maybe 2005, 2006, held the record for the top VHS sales. Mm. I guess second only to Gone with the Wind, and that is the Chuck Norris epic Invasion USA. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen this one. It is actually, Chuck Norris is credited with part of the screenplay. It's a classic. I just rewatched it over the weekend. Chuck Norris stars as Matt Hunter. It's a great film. It's got Richard Lynch, who is like the quintessential bad Russian dude. Really, really a great film. I've watched it over and over again, and I caught something this watch that I've never seen before. At one point in the movie where he's driving his awesome pickup truck, because he always has an awesome pickup truck, he pulls into a street and then turns around and backs up to pull back out. And as the camera stops right there, he's on Walker Street. And I'm like, it's very clear. As a matter of fact, he backs up again to go out the other way. And I'm like, that cannot be just a coincidence. But this is a great film. If nothing else, for the single line, if you come back in here, I'll hit you with so many rights, you'll be begging me for a left.
That's fantastic.
That needs to be a t-shirt or a tattoo.
Yeah, that one, or God, I am sick of frogs.
Yeah, Invasion USA, number 50 here? Yeah, number 50 on the 1985 box office. So wasn't a monster hit, but did really well, and obviously super well with VHS. Yes. Rental, but did you say it was rental or sales?
Sales.
Sales, okay. Yeah. So, hey, I mean, 30 years of Chuck Norris infomercials, you can see why.
Yeah, exactly.
The man sells well on tape. What can you say?
Yeah. And there's a cool little homage while he's watching TV at one point. Earth versus the Flying Saucers was playing on the TV. Let me bump to JD. You got a number four, right, bud?
I do. I have, my list is probably like 10 strong right now, so I'm still like battling back and forth about what to include and what to cut and how to place them. So a little of what I'm doing is a little bit off the cuff. I'm probably not as prepared as I should be, but it's a tie. I have a three-way tie for number four right now. I'm going to go with my gut, and I'm going to say Brewster's Millions.
Oh, wow. Great. Yes.
John Candy, Richard Pryor. It's a baseball movie. It's based on a novel from 1920 or short story or, you know, whatever. It's such a cool little concept. If you had, well, how long does he have? Is it 30 days?
30 days to spend $30 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even now, and there's so many stipulations and rules that go into it. You can't just go buy a $30 million house and call it a day. Right. There's so many rules and stipulations that it's a good conversation piece as a movie and as like a moral and philosophical, it's pronounced, Kyle, apparently I'm you tonight, philosophical conversation, where you really get down to the pins and needles of who you are as a person and what you can accomplish with $30 million. It's awesome. It's a great movie, and it stands up. I can't believe we haven't reviewed it yet.
I just rewatched that probably 3 or 4 months ago, and it blew me away. I believe it's a remake of an older film where he has to spend $3 million. Maybe it was from the 50s or even earlier. And I really enjoyed the way that they changed things up and had him spending that money, because he can't have any money at the end and he can't tell anybody he's doing it.
So not to pull on you, but this is actually the 7th incarnation of story as a movie. There's been 7 versions of it.
Get out.
I couldn't name a single one of them to you, but apparently the internet tells me there's 7.
Oh, well, if it's on the internet, it must be true.
I trust everything true. I see and read on the internet, mm-hmm. especially on Pornhub. I mean, what?
Dear Lord. And that took a twist. And it's Over the Me with number four as I mute JD here in the background. Man, this is another movie here. I feel like my list is going to be super predictable today. But, man, it's 85 and I got to play the hits. I am putting probably my favorite John Hughes movie on the list here. I'm actually surprised with myself that it's not higher. But it's about these five high school students that meet in Saturday detention and discover how much they have in common. It's a lot more than they originally thought. And I love the writing. I love the characters. I love the cast. Emilio Estevez, Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, Ali Sheedy. Just you could go on and on. Paul Gleason. I'm talking about The Breakfast Club. It's it's a movie I watch religiously every year. We've talked about it on the podcast with one of our favorite guests on here that we've had, Chris Clues, who wrote What 80s Pop Culture Teaches You About Today's Workplace, which you can buy on Amazon, cheap plug. But yeah, Jamie, I'm sure this was a movie that you saw in that dollar theater in Louisiana when you were 15. What was some of your memories about Breakfast Club, first time you saw it?
Never heard of it. Did they have breakfast together? What was going on there? No, this was...
You schemer.
This was a movie, and of course, Hughes was on top of his game with this film. Everyone in high school at that time wanted to be the Breakfast Club. We literally went around figuring out who was what character, and it was a very, very influential film, and it started a love of Hughes movies for me because I went on to, 16 Candles and some Kind of Wonderful and all the other films that would come out later. Just super, super influential force and a great movie. I do have brought another generation into it. My daughter, she's 11 now. My 20-year-old saw it too, but just recently we started showing her some of the Hughes films, and mm-hmm. It's cool to see her getting into it the way that I got into it,
Yeah.
Great films, really. Good choice.
Thank you. And yeah, probably one of my favorite characters in cinema history, John Bender, just amazing lines throughout. Screws fall out all the time. The world's in their perfect place. He's got his whole monologue where he acts like his dad. It's just amazing. Check out, we actually did a full review on this. Check it out in our archives and you will not be disappointed. But Jamie, I'm hoping you don't disappoint me with number four. What do you got?
Oh, number four for me is a movie that started a love of not just Jeffrey Combs, but also Herbert Lovecraft. I'm talking about H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator.
Wow. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never heard of it. No, I haven't.
You've never heard of Reanimator?
No, I don't think so.
And we've been friends for
2 months.
Yeah, apparently. Gosh, oh. Jamie, go give your spiel about Reanimator because I love it. It's a great pick.
Oh, gosh, I think I left something on the stove. I'll have to end the podcast now. I'm sorry. No, so Lovecraft had written the story, which was a lot of the source material was used in the movie, but they did so much more with it. It's a story about Herbert West, who was a student at Miskatonic University, who is trying to break through and determine how to bring life out of death. And this is one of my favorite Barbara Crampton films too. And no, it's not just because, she's nude in this movie. It's because it has some of the best lines in it. And if you haven't seen it, it is definitely worth watching. Just for some of the one-liners alone in this film, it's a classic. And it started a whole generation. I think there were three movies in the Reanimator series, and then they tried to do two more. It's become a comic book series. It's great. What can I say about it without giving spoilers away on it? It was a fantastic film, and I have it in three different versions and watch it over and over again. It was actually, if you remember, sadly, Stuart Gordon just passed away last month. He was actually the director on this one. I actually got to see it in the theater when I went with an older high school person who I will remain anonymous right now, so I don't get him in trouble, even though that was 30 years ago. But loved it. Loved it. So that would be mine.
Cool.
JD, since you have heard of this movie and you know of this movie, I'll let you go with number three.
Oh, she's we're on number three already, huh? These lists go by so quickly. But with that being said, Kyle's already said so much about the legendary John Hughes. We've talked about Anthony Michael Hall and his ability to bring it as an actor. It's a movie that's fantastic. It's got Bill Paxton in it. It's got Robert Downey Jr. I'm talking about Weird Science. Suck it, bitches.
Weird Science. Wait, what? Oh, no, I like where you're going, man. I didn't like that you told me to suck it, but hey.
No, this is a really cool movie, and I got to say, I got into it backwards. I saw the TV show first. Which was in the 90s. There was a TV show on USA with Vanessa Angel. Yes, sir. So that really got my blood boiling for Weird Science. And when I found out it was based on a movie, like I jumped right into it and watched this one. I had to have been like 10, 12 years old to see it all come to life the way that it did. Hell, Michael Berryman's in this movie.
And Vernon Wells.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a fantastic movie. And like even listening to you chime on, Kyle, about John Hughes and all that he did with Anthony Michael. And then to realize in 1985, he struck gold twice. Well, maybe not gold, struck silver, perhaps we should say, because what they made $38 million off of a $7.5 million budget. That's not bad, but it's not good gold.
Return. Yeah, that's pretty good return. And both of them, as you may know, both of them take place at Shermer High School. From what I understand, there's actually a scene at the end, and I just have seen Weird Science recently. There's a scene where it's not the same footage, but Hughes reshot it from the same position and had other actors move in the same ways from an outside shot of the high school to put it in that same movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is great. And, you know, this is the movie that, oh, my God. Sorry, I'm a little verklempt here. Kelly LeBrock was so amazing in this movie. So classy, yet so sexy, funny, yet tough. I mean, it was the perfect choice.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. Until Vanessa Angel happened.
Yeah. Oh, especially the episode where she split into two, and there was one that was funny, and oh, never. I'm sorry, we're getting off topic here.
We are off topic.
Whole retrospective about that TV show.
That makes four Vanessa Angel boobs.
Yes, I need to rewatch that movie immediately. It's been way too long since I popped in Weird Science. But yeah, that actually, I don't know, do either of you guys have that, the Brat Pack collection that came out on DVD that had all those movies?
I do not. But no. I know the one you're talking about. I've got a bunch of them individually.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It came with like a nice little like picture book that explained some of the movies, and they had like special features, and yeah, it was like the first time I actually had them all on DVD because they were all VHS worn out copies prior to that. Okay, awesome. Very good pick at number three there, JD. My number three, this one actually was a little bit tougher. I know I said they were easy earlier on, but I'm going to retract my statement because I remember this one being a little bit tougher for me to figure out. Was I going to put it at three? Was I going to put it at two? It went back and forth. But ultimately here, I got it stuck at number three. And this has been talked about in previous episodes before, but it is probably one of my favorite Stephen King movies. And I am talking about Silver Bullet from 1985. I love Silver Bullet. It was probably one of the first horror movies that I got to watch. In fact, my dad is now showing my 7-year-old nephew, which I think is probably too young, going to have massive nightmares. But yeah, just, I mean, Corey Haim, young, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in the business. You've got Gary Busey before he literally fell off the planet, and he's still on it, but we don't know much about what goes on in his head these days. It's just, I love this movie, and it's just one of those that has kind of always stuck with me. And I wonder what a 15-year-old kid watching this in a dollar theater thought of Silver Bullet when it first hit theaters.
Well, a 15-year-old kid would think, oh, my God. Because I was a big, voracious reader. And to see this coming on the screen, it was not incredibly faithful, but it was a very faithful adaptation.
Sure.
And having just read it, and in the way that it was set up as chapters in the book, and they brought that feeling onto it on the screen, it was just, oh man, I was so excited to have seen this movie. Stuck with me for a long time. Actually got to meet not Stephen King, but Bernie Wrightson before he passed, and I brought my copy of Silver Bullet and had him sign it for me. And he was so awesome. Told me a little story about him and Stephen King working on it, and what a great pleasure it was to have somebody who still liked it. And I'm like, oh God, no, a lot of people still like this. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, this was an incredible film. That's an awesome pull. It was on my short list, and I actually had to scratch it off. But no, great pull, great pull.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised it wasn't a little higher on the box office numbers, because mm-hmm. I would have thought this was a massive hit. It really wasn't. I mean, no. 75 on the list. It grossed $12 million, but you know, I guess it was maybe a couple more movies before Stephen King had that like appeal, where it was like, oh, it's a Stephen King movie. Oh, we all have to see it.
Right, right. And he had had some good films before, yeah. But he'd had a couple of stinkers. So he didn't have that track record that brought everybody to go see it.
Okay. Well, there's my number three. Over to you, Jamie. Number three, what do you have?
Well, I have a film. I don't know that we've ever really discussed it before. It starred a full 14-year-old Ian Mitchell Smith, Judy Aronson, and Suzanne Snyder. This is the story about two teenage boys who decide to build a woman off of their computer. no, that's right. My number three also, JD, was Weird Science.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God. I love this movie so much. Just seeing even just the computer that he's using, sticking in that 5 1/4-inch floppy disk and the scanner that's about the size of a microwave. Oh, it was so cool. We just watched it yesterday. So much came back to me. And like I said, she was so beautiful in this movie. But there were so many little things that popped out that really kind of brought me back to 85. One of them was, of course, the famous, "She's alive!" It's actually the color. It's actually the colorized version of Frankenstein that they're watching on TV. Because Turner had been doing all of those colorized versions of it, and I was like, God, they've got to get that out of there. And I was telling my daughter a story that I had a good friend whose father owned the same type of Porsche that the boys drive off in after they get dumped on in the mall. And I can remember us watching this movie and him going, man, that doesn't sound like a Porsche at all. And I didn't know. I mean, okay, dude, sure, whatever, you know. Looking at the trivia last night, there's actually a story in there that it's not the sound that a Porsche makes, that they used the Porsche 928 that the boys drive off on sounds like a Ferrari, because in fact, that is a Ferrari engine noise that they're using.
Oh, cool.
So Kirk, you're right, dude.
listening. One of the things I remember from this movie, going back to it, is there's a point in the movie where Anthony Michael Hall's character references a girlfriend from Canada.
Yes.
Which, if you remember from Breakfast Club, he also has an imaginary girlfriend from Canada. And I just thought, man, that is such great writing to tie these two together. I mean, they're already being shot in the same place, but yeah, it's so awesome.
So I read again last night, that the scene at the end where White and Gary are telling her goodbye and everybody's tearing up. I read that John Hughes actually broke down and started crying.
Oh, wow.
It was, I don't know, but they said it was so moving and so emotional that he started crying. So that was kind of neat to watch again. Like I said, I probably saw that movie 3 times in the theater, and I had the poster of her in the scene at the very end where she's wearing the workout clothes. I had that in my locker at high school.
Yeah, I just have it scanned into my brain permanently. No, jeez. I hear you. JD, over to you. Number two, man, what do you got?
So this is going to be my most pretentious pick on the list, and you're going to make fun of me, Kyle. It's based on a 1948 Italian cinematic film masterpiece, if you will, called Bicycle Thieves. We've got Danny Elfman doing the music. We've got Tim Burton behind the camera. We have Phil Hartman penning the script. you know what I'm talking about. We're talking about Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh my God,
man! I'm not upset about this pick at all. Pee-wee's Big Adventure was fantastic.
It's such a cool movie, and I hadn't seen it in quite a while, but I've recently started watching The Goldbergs.
Yep.
Which is such a cool show, and they do that whole episode dedicated to Adam getting the bicycle and then getting it stolen and then going on the big adventure to get it back. And it just reminded me of just how cool of a movie it is and like how important it was for Paul Reubens' career and for Pee Wee Herman. You know, obviously every misstep that happened to him was kind of, I don't know what to say about it really, because they're missteps. And sometimes you find yourself in a porno theater alone. Sometimes you find yourself in a porno theater with police officers. Yeah, it just depends on rolling the dice. But it's a really cool movie. It's a fun movie because it's very family friendly, but at the same time, it's very adult. Not adult. What's the word I'm looking for?
Well, it's multi-layered for sure, because there are some things that the kids would enjoy, but an adult would be like, oh, I know what he's really saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Shrek, you know, you watch a movie like Shrek, you're like, this is a kid's movie, but all the penis jokes, only the adults get.
And it doesn't quite have that Tim Burton touch to it, like all of his movies do that are dark and gloomy, but it has his artistic impression on the movie. And I loved mid-80s, late-80s Burton. He's fantastic behind the lens.
Oh yeah, and it's such a unique opportunity for like any of our younger listeners or people that are, you know, just coming into cinema and taking a glance at the landscape and being like, oh, I know who Tim Burton is. Watch this, and then you really get a good feeling for who he is as a director and what he can accomplish as a filmmaker, while also sticking to his guns and, you know, not being. It's like it's night and day to comparable to Beetlejuice, but at the same time, they can exist in the same universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was the name of this movie again?
Oh, why is it on your list as well?
No, I just what was the name of it again?
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Set him up and knocked him down. Wow. Okay, I love it. That's a surprise pick at number two for sure. Now, I'm going to go over to my number two pick here. Now, for me, this morning, I woke up, I got dressed. I had to make a decision on which sweatshirt I was going to wear. Honest to God, these are my number one and two picks. I had to choose between sweatshirt A or sweatshirt B. What was I going to rock today? You'll be happy to know I rocked my Goonies sweatshirt all day long, and it was my number two pick here. I love the Goonies. I probably watch this movie 5 times a year. And it's just Mikey, Bran, Chunk, Mouth, Andy, Data, Sloth, like just down the list, Mama Fratelli, the Walsh is like, I love every character. I love the story. This was a movie that after I watched it as a kid, like me and my friends went and tried to find treasure. We didn't find nothing. We didn't find anything but old pop bottles out in the woods. But we thought we were going to come across a buried treasure and possibly a pirate ship. It was fun trying to find it. That's all I can say.
Man, I think it's awesome. It does have so many people that have gone on to do other things. Sean Astin, Josh Brolin, one of my favorites, Martha Plimpton. She was the little blonde-haired girl.
Yep.
Steph,
I think. The glasses, yep, Steph.
Yep. And then there was Short Round, who was awesome.
Yes, he's fantastic. I actually got to shake his hand at a con.
Oh,
very
really?
Nice guy. Yes, cool. He's still looks exactly the same, still sounds the same, and he's one of those guys too where like you'll see a lot of the guys at these cons kind of sitting at the table and it's like, "Yeah, hi, what's your name? Cool." They sign it. He stands up and will like tell you a story and then sign your stuff. Like he really takes his time and he's great with the fans, and that makes me even a bigger fan of Short Round, Jonathan Ki-Hyu-Kwan.
Yes. He was great in that movie. I loved all of his little gadgets and stuff. He'd open his coat up and it would come out, you know. We can't forget Joey Pants either. He was one of the two sons of Mama Fratelli.
Yeah, absolutely. He's fantastic. Now, real quick, Short Round has not been in a movie in like 20 years. He has a movie coming out, and he's actually top listing with Jamie Lee Curtis.
No way.
It's a sci-fi movie called Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. So I am really excited to see what happens. And I believe it's an A24 movie. So, yeah, I'm like pumped about this.
Wow. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we got something to look forward to. And he has not been in anything in forever. So
it's ahead of the class, I think.
Yeah, it's been a minute. So, all right, Jamie, number two, what do you got?
Well, mine is actually a movie that I will tell you straight up, I did not see in 1985. Yeah, yeah. This is the one movie that I could not, probably wouldn't really even have appreciated it if I saw it at 15. But I'm talking about the Lamberto Bava and Dario Argento masterpiece that is Demons.
Hmm.
So, has either of you seen it?
A while ago. It's been a minute, but yeah, in my heyday of my horror movie pretentia.
I have this movie. I actually brought it in here with me because it's my favorite film. It's so great. It's all about this weird, mysterious old movie theater that is suddenly being brought back to life, the Metropolis, and these creepy people with like a Phantom of the Opera mask are going around handing out tickets for people to get in free. And what you find out is once everybody's in, they're locked in. The things that are happening on the screen start to mirror what's happening in the theater. And just all of these demons start coming out. People get cut and they oh man, it's, if you haven't seen it, it is an amazing movie. Like I said, I didn't see it in 85, but I have probably watched it 20 times since then. I have the old Anchor Bay version of it. I have never even bought it in Blu-ray because I can't imagine it being any better than I have it right here.
I'm looking at the IMDb for this, and there is a user review, and I just want to read the title in the last line of this because I think you'll get a kick out of this. It says it's a semi-coherent, metal-as-hell, glorious slice of 80s horror cheese. And it, the last line says, sit back, open a can of Coke, shut your brain off, and prepare to have the time of your life.
I would agree with that. There's so many things in here that don't make sense. But if you're on the IMDb page, you know, you look through some of the names of the characters, and and you're going to see like Ingrid and Rosemary. But my favorite one is Tony the Pimp. And it's sure enough, this guy brings three of his escorts with him to the movie. And it's, oh my God, it's such a great, great film. And, and it would never win any awards, but it's number two in my heart.
That's amazing. Yeah, there's a character called Hot Dog. I'm in. I need to see this.
Any movie that has a helicopter that crashes through the roof, you've got to see that movie, you know?
I agree. All right, let's give the rundown, and then we'll get to the final pick here. So, JD, you started with Once Bitten, bit of a sleeper on the list here. Then we went to Brewster's Millions at number four. Weird Science was number three. Two was Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Number one movie of 1985. Lay it on us. What do you got?
I feel like you already know what it is. Written by, you know, I think wildly successful Jeff Loeb, who in the same year also wrote the original story for Commando. Commando is not my pick. It's going to be Teen Wolf.
All the way at number one. Who would have thought? Actually, I would have thought, because when I mentioned Teen Wolf to him this month as our movie topic, he basically jumped out of his chair with a yes. So, yes, I love it. JD, expand. Why is Teen Wolf number one on your list?
For me, Teen Wolf is definitely, it's like Brewster's Millions in that it's a rags to riches kind of a story where you have this gangly little Michael J. Fox, who is a nobody in the high school circles, who becomes bestowed with the power of the mythical werewolf and chooses to use that power to play basketball. It's like Air Bud meets that song by Not a Surf, popular.
Air Bud, come on. Oh, I'm sorry. That killed me there, comparing Michael J. Fox to Air Bud.
Well, I mean, there's so much complex and subtleties, and it's like a rich Vietnamese soup that you're eating as you're watching this movie, that there's so much more to it, that there's a lot of satire that pays off well, and the acting is pretty solid, and the it's so quotable, the gags are great, and the costume actually kind of works. And it's a great Halloween costume. If you ever are on a lookout for something good to dress up as for Halloween, be Scott Howard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't disagree with that.
No, why not? I might go as that this year if I don't go as freaking Tiger King, Joe Exotic. We'll see.
Just don't go as that bitch, Carol Baskin.
No, that's going to be my wife.
I'll pay for the sardine oil.
Which way you put that on my damn shoes? Okay. All right. Here's my breakdown from 5 to 1. I started with Teen Wolf, then went to The Breakfast Club. Silver Bullet was number 3. The Goonies were good enough for number 2. And my number 1 pick, how could it not be? We named the podcast after it. My other t-shirt or sweatshirt in the closet. My Flux Capacitor, Back to the Future sweatshirt. Yep, it's number 1, Back to the Future, as it always is. I love this movie. I know you talked earlier, Jamie, about having a movie in 3 different copies. I think I might have this in 4 different copies.
Wow.
so it's just, I love this movie. I love the idea of a 17-year-old student accidentally getting sent 30 years into the past and trying to see if he can save his family and get to know his parents, but his mom's like hitting on him. Like, it's the story is just wild. And then you have this eccentric scientist named Doc Brown. He's just, Marty. Yeah. You got Einstein. You've got Biff. What a butthead. JD, you're very Biff like in real life, which is why I like you. Mm. So, yeah, make like a banana and get out of here. Would you?
Yeah. But Biff is my hero.
Jamie, I have to ask, because I think I've asked every guest that we've had that was around your same age that we've had on this show, what was it like coming out of the theater after watching Back to the Future as a kid?
Oh, man, our minds were blown. I mean, just absolutely blown. Just all of the things that you said, you know, of course, you've got that whole creepy thing about his mom is digging on him, which, right. You know, yeah, okay, I guess. But, just all of the different things and the ways that you watch the movie, because you didn't have those kind of movies that they weren't strictly science or crazy humor, you know, and they were able to take all of those things together with an incredible actor and host of actors and actresses and laid this whole mythos that we had no idea there'd be 2 more. I mean, it just, when he takes off to the future, you're like, oh my God. And then it says, you know, coming soon, da da da. You're like, yeah, okay, well, we've seen this before and it's, you know, we may or may not have another movie. And then you get the second one and then you get the third one and they're going behind the scenes of the first one. And oh man, it was such an incredible film. And it, everybody dressed that way too. We all wanted those big, you know, jackets with the, oh my God, it was so cool. And I actually knew a guy in a town that we had moved to called Ball, whose dad had a DeLorean. Oh my God, that thing rides like a piece of crap.
It's shit, Bell. Yeah.
Oh God, but it was so, and his dad owned the sanitation department, and I'd watched enough gangster movies to know what that meant. But there was no mob in Ball, Louisiana, though. I'm sure of that. But yeah, it was so, oh, he had the most friends after that movie came out. Oh,
God. I will tell you this. I was very, very close to owning a DeLorean. My aunt's father had one, and as she was passing away, she said, I want you to have the DeLorean, because she knew how big of a fan I was. And then when she passed away, my uncle said, nah, and sold that car months later.
Bastard.
For like $5,000.
Oh,
those cars restored now are worth a fortune.
Yeah.
And I would have kept it, and I would have eventually paid to get it restored when I had money. So it's a bummer. But yeah, I will tell you this. We had a guy on the show. His name is Adam Contrast, and he has a documentary on Amazon Prime called The Fastest DeLorean in the World. Very entertaining. And he will be the one to tell you, like, no matter where he goes, all these conventions, he can have Doc Brown sitting in the car. He can have Mayor Goldie Wilson. The biggest star is always the car. Yes. Wherever he goes. It's like driving Tom Cruise.
That's wherever cool. Wow, that is cool. And there were so many neat little things to take away from that movie. It's just, oh my God, it's such a good, great pick. Of course, I knew this had to be in there somewhere just because it had to be. Otherwise, I have made a horrible, horrible mistake.
All right. Well, let's get your rundown here, Jamie, before we get your number one pick. You started with Invasion USA, a little Chuck Norris. And then we went to The Reanimator at number four. Weird Science was number three. You had Demons as number two, a movie I definitely have to watch now. And I'm very curious to hear what your number one pick is. Lay it on us.
It's party time for zombies. That's right. My number one pick, Return of the Living Dead.
Nice.
Yes.
This, I was rabid for this film when it came out. I loved zombies, and I was able to get my uncle to take me to go see this. We actually paid full dollar for this one.
Oh, wow.
I remember seeing it. It didn't have popcorn that time, but it was so worth it. Everything about this movie just screams zombies and horror films to me. And after watching it, I don't know, 40 or 50 times since then, this movie never gets old for me. I'm always finding something out about this film that I hadn't seen before. Have you both seen it?
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Good. So there's the thing I most recently found out about it is the Freddy character. At one point when they're near the end and he's got his Letterman jacket on, I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but on the back of it, it has the expletive F-U on it. And after shooting that, I believe Dan O'Bannon noticed it in dailies, and he says, well, crap, we can't do this because we can never show this scene on TV. So he went and had another jacket made that reads television version on the back of the jacket. And they refilmed those two little bitty scenes so they could put it in. And I saw it on YouTube. Sure enough, it looks just like the same script. It just says television version on the back. But this movie, I have never gotten such a strange feeling in my pants for a naked white zombie dancer as I did when Leanna Quigley jumped up on there. That there's a whole story. I don't know if you've ever seen this story before, but when she gets up to do her dance and she's natural up there, they told her, oh, no, we've got to, we can't show the hair on TV like that. So they sent her away and trimmed it all off and brought it back. And then like, oh my God, no, that's even worse. We can't do that. So if you'll notice, they actually make like a Barbie panty thing that goes on her. And for all the rest of the shots of the movies, it's just like flat. And it's like, yeah, that's not weird at all.
Not at all. Speaking of her, she is one busy actress. Seems like she's got a million projects. She's closing in on 200 credits.
Yes.
On IMDb, so.
Oh, she's been in so many good ones. You know, Night of the Demons, the original one. The things that woman does with the lipstick case just makes me crazy thinking about it. And there's so many good people in this movie. You sit back and you're like, man, why didn't any of these other people, shoot to stardom? Oh, I'm sorry. I had my sarcasm filter turned off. Let's do this again. No, I love the cast. Yes, it wasn't full of all these great big names, but I thought every actor played their character to the hilt. I really did. Yep. For everybody from if you remember the guy Spider, that guy was actually homeless at the time he got this gig.
Wow.
Yeah. And Casey, the girl, the one who played the party girl in the blue dress, she was actually an exotic dancer at the time. and they wanted her to be the trash character, not the trash. Yeah. Trash character. But she was like, yeah, I'm naked all the time. I'd rather not be. But there's so many great stories in this film. And if you ever get a chance to sit down and listen to it with the commentary on it, man, every scene has something that they're going to give you a story you never knew about. Even down to, was Ernie really a Nazi who had escaped from Germany and was hiding out as a embalmer? And when you start watching it, you're like, oh, well, I guess I could kind of maybe see that now. But that's going to be my number one, Return of the Living Dead.
That's a fantastic pick. And JD, I got to think that you know Michael Nunez pretty well, because I remember us doing an episode and one of your, it might be your favorite soundtrack of all time. I can't remember what it was for, but Street Fighter. He's a DJ.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can't remember what breakdown that was, but you had Street Fighter on a list that was like super high. You remember what I'm talking about?
No. Was it something Adam Family related?
It might have been. I just remember us talking about that movie. I was like, oh, you got to remember DJ.
Of course.
Okay. You got quiet over there. So trying to bring you back in. Well, let's get to some honorable mentions here. I'm sure we all have a couple of them here. JD, what were some of yours that fell just outside of the top five?
So it pained me to not include Reanimator. That was definitely a contender, very strong on my list that I wanted to include, but I just felt the other ones had a little bit more merit to them. So I'm glad that you were able to bring it up and include it on your list, because it's worth talking about. The other
respect,
big one,
brother, respect.
Absolutely. The other big one that I'm surprised hasn't come up at all yet, kind of thought maybe this would be a dark horse for Kyle, but Fright Night.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like Fright Night too.
Fright Night's a really cool movie. It's a fantastic Tom Holland movie. As we know, he did Child's Play, Thinner, and Psycho 2 even. It's just a really cool movie. I don't think the remake did it justice with Colin Farrell in the role, but the original is very kind of, it's a good movie. It's very enjoyable. It's if you've not seen Fright Night, I still recommend that you do see it and that you skip the remake from 2011? Which I haven't seen the remake, so I guess I shouldn't bash on it.
I saw it, and I agree with you. It's really hard to recapture some of that original magic.
Yeah.
But it was enjoyable as long as I didn't compare it to what the original was. I mean,
I agree.
That movie had so much going for it. Who knew that Marcy from Married with Children could be so hot? I'm like, holy crap, you know, and Roddy McDowell just chewed every, and I, in a good way, chewed every scene that he was in. It was just riveting, you know?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm surprised that it did not come up on one of our lists, but it's worth mentioning it because it's a great fucking movie.
Yes, it okay. is.
Very good. So yeah, a couple of my honorable mentions. One, I love John Candy, JD. We talk about him often. Summer Rental. Love that movie.
Yes.
Watch it every year. Just rewatched it with my son. He absolutely loved it. The race at the end with the boats. And yeah, it's a great movie. And I love him getting sunburned and then going on the beach with his water cooler that's broken and just spraying everybody. Just hilarious. It's such a Midwest dad type of move. And then also on my list of honorable mentions, I had Explorers, which is a movie that I grew up watching that I really enjoyed just because it's about young kids. And yeah, and just it's a cool movie. I don't know. Have you guys was the last time you guys watched Explorers?
Well, I actually am not a fan of that movie.
Oh,
I know there are a lot of people who really do enjoy it. And it's one of those movies that I can understand the appreciation for. Mm-hmm. I just feel it's just doesn't have the right pacing for me.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
And I wonder if that's a movie where if you watch it at like 15, 16 years old, if you're already kind of past.
Boom.
That's me.
Yeah, that's probably
exactly. I saw it like when I was like five. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, this is so cool. Like they're going to build their own little like floating device here out of a washing machine and what else. I don't know all the parts they put together, but yeah, it's just like stuff like that. I would try to emulate that as a kid and of course never leave the ground. But I mean, we tried.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was on my outside looking in. And then what else did I have on there? Oh, Rocky IV. I love it. Taking down the bad guy.
I will break you.
Yeah, he didn't break nothing. So,
sorry, are you saying that Ivan Drago was the bad guy? The pride of an entire country?
You're darn right. He kills Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed knew damn well what he was getting himself into. It's Bloodsport, damn it. Bloodsport.
Throw in the damn towel. Oh, I love that movie. Okay, Jamie, what do you got? What were some of your honorable mentions?
Oh, man. You know, I tried not to go too far, but one of the movies that I absolutely loved that came out in 85, and it was a summer movie, too, right after we got out of school. I remember going because my father went to this movie with it. It's got to be Chevy Chase's Fletch. Oh, I don't know if you guys have seen this one. The best line, I still remember it this day. Excuse me, because my car hit a water buffalo. Can I borrow your towel, ma'am? Oh, jeez.
Fletch and Spies Like Us from 85 as well. Both Chevy Chase movies. So,
yep. Both Chevy Chase back to back. I actually did have Fright Night on my short list because I did love that movie. I also loved Life Force with Sir Patrick Stewart. I don't know why I said that in my Sean Connery accent, but I did.
JD, if you would.
What, you want to hear a Sean Connery accent?
I would like to hear a Sean Connery accent if you have one.
Hit him with a little money, pussy, if you would.
It's time for the money, pussy.
I love it.
So another great one that I love, there's two of them that I love to this day that are just not seen as incredibly, I don't know, important films. One of them would be Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, that came out with Fred Williamson with that guy named Fred, and the future Captain Janeway herself. It was supposed to be one of the first of many movies, and it just it was not too good. And then The Last Dragon.
With
Vanity, coming just off of the heels of having done Purple Rain. Barry Gordy had signed her up to do, I don't know, three or four movies, and this incredibly talented guy named Ty Mack, and it's this kind of Barry Gordy-esque Motown kung fu movie with one of the greatest villains of all time, played by Julius J. Carey III from Briscoe County, as Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem.
This is a movie that Paranormal Pat will not stop hassling us about until we cover it.
Oh,
he swears up and down that this is going to be an amazing movie. And when he finally makes his way to Fort Wayne, we are going to sit down and watch The Last Dragon.
Oh, wow.
I am holding out. 35 years of holding out. I am ready for some Last Dragon, finally.
It is it's such an awesome movie. And like I said, this poor guy, I don't know that he's whatever else he's done. But when he does his little Katra stuff where he's... Whoosh, 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 it starts playing this music called Feel the Glow, and you can see it moving, you know, and the Pat is right up there. He's just moved two more notches. He's on the Christmas list now.
Okay. There you go. It's on the list. That is awesome. Well, and hey, Jamie, thank you.
One other thing. Go ahead. One other movie that I had on the list, but I couldn't feel like I put on. It was a made for TV film called The Park Is Mine. They don't make films like they do when I was a kid. It was Friday night movies and Sunday night movies. And it was Tommy Lee Jones about a Vietnam veteran who had kind of lost his mind and had taken over Central Park. And like I said, it wasn't a big film, but man, if you ever get a chance to watch it, he really turned in an incredible performance. Very harrowed, very broken man. And I remember watching that. My father had been in Vietnam, and just kind of watching it and watching him watching the film. It was a memorable movie. So I just had to shout that one out. But I'm sorry, that's it. I'm done. Stick a fork in me. Good.
You know, I really thought that you were going to go give a shout out for Cocoon there for a second.
Oh, Cocoon. I did see that one in theaters.
Did you? Goodness.
I saw too much pruned old flesh in that film.
Oh, and a spry Steve Guttenberg.
Oh, yes. He was. Well, when isn't he spry?
He's still. He's been in the Goldbergs in the recent season, and he looks good. He's doing really? Well.
Oh man, let me tell you, that guy was gold between those two movies and what did they do? 16 Police Academy films, I think. those were some good stuff. I enjoyed those. That's what we should do. We should do all of the Police Academy movies.
Done.
One a month for what is that? About 3 years.
Done.
Done and done. We just become the Police Academy podcast. We're staking claim now. All right. Well, hey, we'll get you out of here on this. Jamie, I know it's your first time on our show, and you're still relatively new to the podcasting realm. So, again, plug your podcast. How can people find you? When did the episodes come out? And plug away, my friend.
Well, great. Well, we are Fave 5 from Fans. Those are four words with four letters each that all start with F. You can find us on iTunes, on Spotify, on podcast. We're also based out of the AOC community website here in Lafayette. A big shout out and a thank you to them. They helped me get going and they host all of my stuff. And as you said earlier, now part of the Slightly Irregular Podcast Network. You can also find me on Twitter at Fave5 from Fans. And we're also on Facebook. And I'm really working on getting my MySpace page back up. So we'll have that coming out to you soon. We come out every week through the coronavirus, and then we might drop back to every other week. But for now, every Friday, look for us to have a new episode. This latest episode, it's going to be a fun one. We're going to be talking about pranks from the U.S. version of The Office, again with my 11-year-old daughter who has watched the show back and forth.
That's great. Yeah, and I should plug the other podcast on the SIP network. So if you guys haven't yet, follow us on Instagram. That's the only page we have set up yet, but a website's coming. Twitter page is coming. But yeah, just want to get those out there. Terrible Tear podcast is part of that. The podcast from another closet. I mean, another world. Dead Hand Radio. The Paranormal Pat. Pativity podcast is on there. Angry Dad. The Mother Effin' Angry Dad podcast. And then we've got From the Waste, which is, I think that's Evan's podcast.
That's Evan, yes.
Yes. So his is on there as well. And then, again, Fave 5 from Fans. So check it out. Follow us on Instagram. And, again, thank you for coming on the show, Jamie. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, it was my absolute pleasure. Thank you both for having me on. I can't wait to do the next one.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening to today's podcast. Again, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, CastBox, and YouTube. You can follow us at Back in Time Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And as always, if you've got something to say throughout the week or an idea for an upcoming movie, let us know. Shoot us a message or DM us. Let us know what you want to hear us cover next. And this has been a really fun episode. We will be back in a couple of days with another top five episode as we get into top five Michael J. Fox movies. Can't wait to get into that one. And then we're going to have Teen Wolf to close out the month. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys in a couple days. See ya.
Wilford Brimley, diabetes.
This is Hulk Boy from Hollywood saying good night.